Parshas Vayigash, you got Perek Mem Vav Pasuk Chaf Ches. So everybody knows what happens. Yosef reveals himself to the brothers. The brothers decide, the Shvatim, they go back to Yaakovini. Yaakovini decides to go down to Mitzrayim. And Yehuda is sent ahead. This Yehuda Shalach Lefanav al Yosef. He's sent ahead to Yosef, Lahorus Lefanav Goshna, to tell, I don't know what the wording, how you want to translate this over here. Lahorus Lefanav, to show the way in front of him, Goshna, to the city of Goshen, or the land of Goshen, the Oar to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen itself. So the question is why Yehuda was sent ahead of everybody else. Why is Yehuda sent over everybody else? So we have two questions here. Number one, what was the purpose of sending anybody ahead? Why do that in the first place? Why send anybody in the first place, just sending ahead of anyone else? Number two, why Yehuda over everybody else? So it seems like Yehuda is supposed to do something here, and it seems like we're supposed to know why Yehuda was sent over everybody else. So Rashi says, like Targum Unculus, and this is the Pashup shot in the Pasuk, to clear the path, to make sure things were going to be okay, to make sure the road is smooth, and showing them what they need to do to settle down properly. That's Rashi's pshat, the idea from Targum Unculus. Sforno and Chizkuni say the same. There are balitosis that are all around this idea. The entire idea is, make sure that the trip is going to be uneventful. We don't have to worry about anything that's going to happen. Targum Yonason says, he went to speak to the Egyptian princes that were living in that area at the time. He was to tell them that Yaakov was given this land by Yosef and by Paro, and that they should leave on their own, that there should be no fights. That when Yaakov and the Shvatim come in, they're not going to live among the Egyptian princes that were there. The Egyptian princes on their own will say, okay, we're going to go. We didn't realize that this is a land that was given over to somebody else. We're going to get up and we're going to go somewhere else. So Yehuda did so. He convinced them that they should get up and go. And the path was smooth for Yaakov to live by himself without any other nations around until he passed away, which obviously makes a lot of sense. Both of those ideas make a lot of sense and they go together. Tom Didas adds a second reason. The second reason is, I guess that you consider this a third reason, sort of, to get rid of the Avodah Zarah and the Pritzus that was in that land. Egypt was filled with Arias and filled with Avodah Zarah. Yaakov couldn't live in a place that was filled with that much Tumah, so everything had to go. He had burned the wagons that Paro had sent him that had the pictures of Avodah Zarah on it, so you better believe that if he goes to a land like Goshen, he wants to get rid of everything that has any vestige of Tumah or Avodah Zarah in it, and that's exactly what he did. He got rid of everything. He sent Yehuda there to get rid of everything that was there, and Yehuda went from place to place throughout Goshen, getting rid of the Avodah Zarah, getting rid of the whatever type of churches they had there. Everything was gone in order for Yaakov Avinu to live there properly. Chavetz Chaim says even more so. Yaakov Avinu was worried being in anything that was part of Mitzrayim. This land was filled with Tumah, and he knew it was filled with Tumah, and he didn't want to be involved with those evil influences of Mitzrayim. Now, he knew he was going to end up meeting Paro. That was going to happen. He knew it was going to happen, and he realized, okay, I'm going to have to meet Paro. I'm going to have to be by him. But for the rest of time, I want to be away from these guys. I don't want to be anywhere near these guys. Keep me as far away from these people as possible. Make sure that doesn't happen. Says the Chavetz Chaim, he was hoping that Goshen would be good enough for it, and that's why Yehuda was sent. All these ideas are the same basic idea. Keep away from the bad influences, from the Tumah, from Avodah Zarah that was there in Mitzrayim. That's the Tamidah, that's the Chavetz Chaim. Maskil David adds on, and this makes a ton of sense. I think this would apply to anybody. Yaakov Avinu had just gone through 22 years without having Ruach HaKodesh. Why didn't he have Ruach HaKodesh for the last 22 years? He said about Yosef HaTzadik. We know that, right? For 22 years he hasn't had it. He just got it back for the first time in 22 years. He got his Ruach HaKodesh back and it felt awesome. It felt like this unreal feeling of like, wow, euphoria. This is unbelievable. I got everything that I could possibly want. He was so happy to get this Shechina back. He wasn't going to lose this for anything. I'm not going to a land where I could possibly lose this. I'm not going to allow that to happen. So therefore he said, I don't want to be anywhere near Avodah Zarah. I don't want to be anywhere near Arias. I don't want there to be any negative influences anywhere near me. So I don't get anywhere near. Now again, none of us understand this fully, but I think you get the idea. You've been in yeshiva for a while. You've been in yeshiva for a long time. And you sat there and you said to yourself, you know what? I just don't want, when I go back, I don't want to be around those types of influences anymore. I don't want to do those types of things that I was involved with before. The friends that I had and the people that were there, I don't want to do that type of stuff anymore. I think everybody understands that. Everybody gets the concept. Once you're involved in something kadosh for a while, you just don't want to stop. You don't want to get anywhere else. That's the idea. Says the Maskil David, he wanted to make sure it wouldn't interfere. That's why Yehuda sent away. The Alshich says, who should have been in charge of this? Yosef. But Yosef was too busy. Yosef is involved in all the government issues, and he knew that Yosef was not going to be able to do this as well. Yehuda, on the other hand, would never take no for an answer. Yehuda was a guy who was going to be separate. So Yaakov assumed, listen, Yosef, eventually I'll see. Yosef, I wish he could do this work for me. Yosef will obviously be effective, but he can't do it the same way Yehuda can because he's involved in the government. That's the reason why he couldn't send somebody like Yosef to do it. Yehuda, who wasn't used to this stuff, would have to do it instead. Plus, again, it makes sense to me as well. Somebody who's lived, just think for yourselves, guys. If you would meet a Haredi guy from Mea Sharon, and he'd come up to you and he would say, is Shalit's a good place for me to eat at? Is Milt's a good place for me to eat at? A guy from Mea Sharon going to Milt's with all the TVs all around would probably be shocked. It's a shocking place. Now, us, we're used to it. Who doesn't have 7 TVs in their bathroom, right? I mean, we all have it, so we can watch everything while we're eating and while we're in the kitchen. We all have TVs everywhere. So we're used to the concept of TVs everywhere around, so you can watch these things, even though you plan on eating it. Yeah, you plan on eating instead. But it's just not there. These guys can't get it. They're not there. Yosef HaTzadik was used to certain things, where Yehuda wouldn't be used to it. If Yehuda goes into this place, he'll get rid of X, Y, and Z. While Yosef will say X and Y aren't so bad. I'll get rid of Z, but I'm not going to get rid of X and Y. That's the reason why Yehuda had to go instead of Yosef. That makes a lot of sense to me. The Be'er Yosef says the exact same thing. Be'er Yosef says it makes sense. Yehuda knew what Yaakov Avinu wanted. Yosef hadn't been around for 22 years, so he sent Yehuda. Now, all of those concepts, those ideas, are all around the same basic idea. They're all revolved around Yehuda went to clear out the area, said everything was better for Yaakov to be there. And that makes sense. Everything was right there. The Shach says something amazing. Yaakov Avinu was the neshama of Adam Arishon. Now, we see that hinted to in the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu was me'ein shufrei to Adam Arishon. He had something similar to the beauty of Adam Arishon. The idea behind that Gemara, the deep part behind that Gemara is that Yaakov Avinu was Adam Arishon, that he had a tikkun that he was supposed to do for Adam Arishon. Just like Adam Arishon came into a world that was already made for him. Everything was created from day 1 to day 6. He was the last thing to be created, so he came into a world that was already set up. Yaakov Avinu deserved to be in a world that was already set up. When he came down to Mitzrayim, he needed a house set up for him, an area that was ready for him to be there. Everything had to be ready for him to come down to. That's the concept. The Kedusha of the world had already gotten there. Yosef was grabbing the coins and the money from everybody in the world, taking in their Kedusha, adding Kedusha to what was in Mitzrayim at the time. Everything had to be set for what it was. It even makes sense. You guys know what Goshen was, right? Goshen was given to Sarai Imenu, as her ksuva from Paro, when Paro wanted to marry her. Even the land of Goshen was already set up to be a place that was filled with Kedusha from the times of the Avos, for Yaakov Avinu to be able to walk in there and already see a set up land. It's all from that tikkun that he had within his neshama from Adam Arishon, and he was zocha to have it, and everything worked out the way that it was supposed to be. Now Rashi brings down a medrash. It's also the second pshat in Targum Yonasan that says that he was sent there to bring in a base Talmud, an area for people to learn, and says Rashi, for the purpose of Hora'ah. Anybody know what Hora'ah is? What's Hora'ah? How do you translate that? It's to Paskin Halachos. This is not just a school. It's not just an area for people to sit and learn. This was an area specifically, says Rashi, as a base Hora'ah, a place for them to paskin properly. Rabbeinu Ephraim brings a gematria, and honestly, I feel this way. If a gematria gets this high in numbers, you automatically win. This is like, you automatically get a chelik in Olam Haba for getting a gematria at this point. He says, Ve'es Yehuda Shalach Lefanav El Yosef Laharos Lefanav Goshna is the gematria of 2320. You have to add on one for Kolel. Same gematria as Letaken Liyakov Beis HaMedrash Shiyehei More, that there should be Hora in such a place. That's pretty awesome. To say such a thing is going there. Sifsei Chachamim says the hint is from the word Lahoros itself. Lahoros is missing a second vav to tell you that the letters are Litorah. that there is Torah involved. That's what you have in this area. That's the idea of what this is referring to and the concept of what he's doing. So that means that Yaakovinu is sending Yehuda there to make a base medrash. And our question is going to be, what's pshat? What's pshat? There's a Yaakov Kamenetsky that doesn't like this exactly. There's the Yafei Tar and the Medrash Rabbah and Tzadiheh that says there's a machlokas if this is a base medrash for Hora or if it's just a base Talmud for anybody who wished to learn. That could be really be for Gerim, that they were planning on having prospective Egyptian Gerim come into this area like Avram and Yitzchak did. If this is a place for Hora for the Shvatim or if it's a place for the people around them, regardless, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. Either way, you have a place that's called a base Talmud itself. So what's going on, guys? Why do you need a house for this? Why does Yehuda need to be sent to make a house for Beis Talmud? No, you learn in your house. You learn in your own house. Wherever you live, that's where you learn. Well, you need a Beis Medrash, and I'll prove it to you. There was no such concept as a Beis Knesset. There may have been a Beis Medrash, but there's no such concept of a Beis Knesset until the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. It's one of the things Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky talks about in a few places. It was the first time after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and they saw what happened in Golis Babel, that people intermarried so quickly. In 70 years, there were so many people who intermarried, they realized you need a place where people can hang out and Jews can meet Jews, where there can be Jewish people hanging out with Jewish people. I don't mean like boy-girl thing, because that's a different story. But meaning at least husbands, prospective husbands can meet their father-in-laws, or prospective mother-in-laws can pick out their daughter-in-laws. Let's say that to make it a little bit more, you know, a little more black hat. And we'll say that that's the place. Shuls were meant to be a Jewish social system. And that was created after the first base image was destroyed. So how do you tell me right now, all of a sudden there was this base Talmud that was created over here? Ayala Sashachar, this is the Rabbi Shimon Zatzal, he goes ahead and asks, what's going on over here? What do they need a specific building? Now he doesn't answer the question. He doesn't answer the question. He leaves it as a Shaila. What, they needed a building to be able to sit and learn? My answer is just simply put, I think it's obvious. It's always better to learn in a group than it is to learn by yourself. Learning by yourself, obviously, aside from the Gemara in Tainus that talks about what happens when a person learns by himself, when people learn in a group, there's more chachma going on. There's more people talking with one another. There's more discussions where you're able to figure things out together with somebody else. You can talk with the other person and say, hey, bounce ideas off each other to see what each person says. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen when you're sitting by yourself. So that I get. That's, I think, the answer that I would give to Rav Steinman's question. But the Sefer Toras Chaim Vemuna brings down a Gemara in Brachos that says, and you for sure have heard of this, Brachos and Daf Ches, says, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, all Hashem left in this world is the Dalid Amos of Halacha. The Beis HaMikdash is created. Sanhedrin sat down. They paskin the Halacha and the Lishkas HaGozis. They were able to make that halacha together. When the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and there's nothing left, then you need people sitting down and paskining a halacha. And where they sit down and paskin, the Shekhinah comes and rests with them. When they do that, that's where the Shekhinah goes. His suggestion is that the Dalet Amos Halacha means your Koveya Amakom, a specific place to sit down and learn halacha, whether that's a base medrash or a certain shul, or even an area of the house where you have a bunch of people sitting down together, your koveya amakom to be there. This may be why Yehuda needed to be sent to create this base Talmud. Maybe, because you need a place for the Shekhinah to rest. You need a place in Golos where everything can be, where everybody knows what the end goal is, to paskin the halacha properly, bring back the Beis HaMikdash, to have the Shekhinah manifest constantly within Klal Yisrael. That idea is there. For that, you need a building. For that, you need something that's going to be the Doresh David said, this is what saved us throughout Golos. Listen, we've been in Golos for almost what? Since the year 70 of the Common Era, if you want to count it from there. We're dealing with altogether 1,900 and almost 50 years, 1,950 years of Golos. And how have we survived? How have we done it? Intermarriage is rampant within the last 240 years. And that's 100% true. But before that, intermarriage was held off. What held it off? And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, and Dorosh David brings it up, it's because we had a place to learn in Daven. Even though we didn't have a Beis HaMikdash, we had the Mikdash Me'at, that unfortunately at the same time was stolen by the Reform to become their little temples. The concept is that we were able to have a Makom Torah and a place to go whenever we needed a little bit of help. You sat down and said Tehillim if you weren't in the mood to learn. You had a shir that you could go to. You could sit and learn with a chavrusa. There was so many things that were happening right in that place. This concept of what Yehuda needed to do is what Yaakov is telling his kids. Kids, we're going into Golos. You know what's going to help us survive this galus? Maisa avos simin labanim. We make a base medrash. We have the concept of base medrash. And maybe, I don't even know this, maybe Anshei Knesset Gedolah saw this. It was the galus of Yaakov number two. Galus number one was by Lavan. Galus number two is in Mitzrayim. Galus number one could have represented Galus Bavel. And Galus number two represents our Galus, Galus Edom. And what helped us survive as Jews? To keep our names, and to keep our language, and to keep our clothing, and to keep us away from Arias, and to keep us from speaking Lashon Hara. What stopped us? The base medrash. We had a base medrash. Now, what did they learn there? I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea. Could have said Yeshiva Shem, the Aver Torah. Maybe there were other things that they got. Sefer HaYashar from Avraham Avinu. Sefer HaZiel HaMalach. Maybe there's a concept of what they had from the Avos, just the mitzvos that they would have gotten from Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu and Yaakov. I don't know what they learned there, but it doesn't matter to me. Again, this doesn't matter. The concept of Maisa Avos Sim Labanim, make a base medrash first. That's the most important thing. I don't know if this is true when people are opening up a city. I have no idea. When you're opening up a frum city, my idea would be that the first thing you build is the base medrash. That everything revolves around the base medrash. There are certain areas in Eretz Yisrael that I know were created that way. Very, very frum yeshuvim. For example, the place that's in the Nofai alone, which is near the yeshiva called Shalvim. I know what they did was that they put in the middle the shul and then they built around it. It's like circular all the way around it. Because that's the way it should be. Everything should be revolved around the shul. And then you build around. You need another shul somewhere, whatever, because it gets bigger. You make another shul. But the concept is that everything revolves around what the shul is. And the shul, I mean nowadays, like our multi-purpose shul, where a shul really is a base medrash as well. And it becomes both. That everything should be revolved around, when are we going to learn? Where are we going to be learned? It shouldn't be that the shul's on the outskirts. And maybe that was back in the day where they had the base medrash out in the fields for other reasons. Other reasons of problems of yichud and other issues. But the concept of what it's going to be is revolve everything around the shul, build it first, build the base medrash first, and make sure it's there. We learned that from Yaakov Avinu. Okay, so that's number one. That's why I wanted to build a base medrash. Why Yehuda? Why is Yehuda sent over any of the other shvatim? Why not send all the shvatim together? Why not bring everyone together and say, Yaakov, you know, I'll travel with the woman and the children that are back here. All shvatim, go ahead and build me a base medrash. Why is it just Yehuda and not anybody else? Clearly that's an indication of something, right? Medrash Agadah says exactly that. Very good, Michael. Yehuda was a king, and Yosef was a king. Only a king can go to another king and ask for permission to build something on his own. You can't expect this to happen on its own. You need to get permission. This was especially appropriate after the fight Yehuda and Yosef had beforehand. Yehuda and Yosef just got into this massive fight. You'd think that they can't shtim with one another. They can't deal with one another anymore. Answer is, of course they can deal with one another. Of course they could. Yaakov Avinu wanted to show that there was peace among Yaakov and Yosef, Yehuda and Yosef, I'm sorry, and that would work out the best for Klal Yisrael. If Yehuda is sent to Yosef and they work together to make a base medrash, that's the greatest thing for Klal Yisrael. The greatest times for Klal Yisrael is when Yehuda and Yosef are together. We only had it for a few years with David HaMelech and then Shlomo HaMelech. And that's it. And then it was gone. We lost it. That gullus of the 10 tribes, right, which happened years later because of the split by Rechavam and Yeravam, has lasted until today. It really has not been able to get itself back. And the idea is that this will make gullus Mitzrayim even better if Yosef and Yehuda work together to make a base medrash. Otzer Ploz HaTorah says the current Rebbe of Munkach asked this question. He says, why couldn't Yosef do it himself? And the answer is, and this is an important point, a Rosh Yeshiva must be a king, not a Mishnah Lamelech. Yosef was important in Mitzrayim. Nobody's going to doubt that. Yosef was able to do everything. But was Yosef the ultimate king?
No.
Was he the god, so to speak, in Mitzrayim? No, there was Paro. He was a Mishnah Lamelech. That's not good enough to be a Rosh Hashiva. You cannot have a Rosh Hashiva who's secondary to anyone. That's not the way yeshiva can go. Hold on 1 second, Jake. The concept is only Yehuda can be a Rosh Hashiva because Yehuda is a Melech. Yehuda will not take no. Yehuda will not take an argument from someone else. He is an absolute king. Even someone with more power, who is second in command, is not greater than a melech in his own right. A person who understands what it means to be that way. A yeshiva has to run through a Rosh Yeshiva and nobody else if it wants to be successful. No hints there. But the idea is that Yosef had to answer to Paro. He couldn't do it. Those Naim Latorah says the exact same thing. What's up, Jake?
What about during the times of the Gemara and Mishnah,
I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to bring up the Nesi'im. Very, very good call. Extremely good call. Tam Bidas, this is again where Sternbach says, this seems to be Musar Haskil, that Yehuda is giving over to Yosef. No matter how busy you are, Yosef, you must find time to learn and to build Bati Midrashim. He hasn't done it yet. Yosef had not done this on his own in Mitzrayim. And therefore, Yaakov's telling him, this is your mistake, buddy. Your mistake is that as great as you are, and as great as you've raised your child, Menashe, look at what Menashe is. Menashe is able to translate, he's able to sit with you, he's able to learn. And eventually, Ephraim, the concept is, you need to find the time and the funds to make a yeshiva work. Yes, you're doing something important, but the most important thing is making this Makom Torah to work for everybody. Alin L'Shabach, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein tells over a story. Right before World War I, started, two wealthy Jews decided to get together to put together a new yeshiva. They figured it would cost 100,000 zlotys. I don't know prices. I have no idea what that means. But they figured it was going to put together would be 100,000 zlotys, like today, to make a new yeshiva, depending on how big you want it. 750,000 to a million bucks, just to start off. Probably even more if you want a building or whatever it is. But if you're in another building, 750,000, not that I've looked into it. So each would have to give 50,000 zlotys for it to be able to work, right? 50,000 from one, 50,000 from another, right? And then we'd have the 100,000, we can make a new yeshiva together. That's what they decided, that we're going to end up doing that. One of the partners, right? So they ended up, it turned out that they were off by 50,000. They needed 150,000. When they realized that they need 150,000, one of the partners, without the other partner there, we'll call him Reuven. Reuven jumped up and said, I'm giving the extra 50,000 on his own. I'm giving the 50,000 on my own. I'm not splitting it. I'm giving the extra 50. Put the other 50,000 in, and Zehu. The other partner, Shimon, came and heard that the other 50,000 was necessary, and he looked over at Reuven and he said, what did you just do? So Shimon said, Reuven said, I paid the extra 50,000 on my own. Said Shimon, I never allowed you to do that. We're partners. If we're partners, then just like you should give 75,000, I'm going to give 75,000. We're not doing 150, 100 by you, 50 by me. We're doing 75, 75, we're partners. Comes Reuven and here's his taina. Reuven's taina is that no, we were partners on the first 100,000. The other 50,000, I'm allowed to take on my own. We were never partners in that. We never expected that to happen. So I get this schus to be able to give the extra 50,000. That was their machlokas. Can you imagine this machlokas? It happens all the time nowadays, right? Anybody who runs yeshivas, they know. People jump at the opportunity. 50,000 zlotys, I'd give 50,000 zlotys. Anybody would give 50,000 zlotys. They brought it to a din Torah before the Chafetz Chaim, who was in Warsaw to help the officials get rid of a certain edict from the Jews. Chafetz Chaim commented that fights like these, fights in quotation marks over here, in the air quotes, may be the reason that the laws that had just been repealed had been repealed. Maybe that's the reason why the non-Jews had gotten rid of these edicts against the Jews, because these types of fights happen, that people are willing to pay all this money to make yeshiva start. He said, putting together yeshivas is by far the biggest yeshua that anyone could have. I don't know what yeshiva was. I don't even know if the yeshiva lasted. I don't even know if the yeshiva opened. I don't have that information. And I know we like to say, like, that was the Mir Yeshiva. No idea. Can't tell you that. I absolutely can't tell you. The concept behind it, conceptually, the concept of willing to give and willing to do anything to open up a yeshiva is huge, absolutely huge. But nonetheless, why not send Levi? Wasn't Levi the Talmud Chacham of the group? Wasn't he the Meister of Yaakov Avinu? The Meister that he took off? Yoru Mishpatech al Yaakov iso Raschal Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu told him. You're going to teach the Mishpatim and the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. Where's Levi? Why is Levi not the Rosh Yeshiva? Okay, what about Yisachar? Yisachar, we know, was a Yode Bina Li'itim. He knew how to translate knowledge. He knew all these crazy things. Why not send Yisachar? We're missing something here. Yehuda is the guy that's going to be in charge. But we're missing Yisachar. We're missing Levi. Why aren't they involved? So Chaim Knievsky gives an answer. Certain people are made to be Rosh Yeshiva. Certain people are made to be Talmidei Chacham. That's his answer. Certain people are made to be Rosh Yeshiva, certain people are not. Yehuda had the air of Malchus about him. You spoke to Yehuda, you spoke to a king. You felt you were talking to a king. He had the air of a Rosh Yeshiva. Levi and Yisachar were Rabbanim. That doesn't make them worse. That's just a different job. They were Ramin. They could lead a shir. They could give a shir in such a way that the Talmidim would gain from it more than Yehuda could. More than Yehuda. But Yehuda was a Rosh Yeshiva. Yehuda was a king. They were Rabbanim. Again, different jobs. Which one's better? I don't know which one's better. How can you say one's better than the other? It's like going to a place like Yeshivas Ner Yisrael, like a great yeshiva like Ner Yisrael. The yeshivas were Feldman, And one of the Magid Yeshirim there are, we know? Zvi Berkowitz, right? You have a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous Rosh Yeshiva and a tremendous Rebbe. Which one's greater? What do you mean, which one's greater? Rav Yisachar Frand is in Eretz Yisrael. Can you say that one is better than the other? Of course, everybody has their opinion, so I'm sure there is somebody that's going to be like, there is. But you have tremendous. Who's better than the other? There's no such thing. One person is made to be a Rosh Yeshiva. One person is made to be a Rebbe. One person is made to be this, etc. Like, everybody has their niche of what they're supposed to do. Nothing's better. So Yisachar and Levi were made to be Ramim, Rabbanim. And what we're saying over here is that Yehuda was made to be a Rosh Yeshiva. That's the concept that he says over here. Now, the Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel, here's what he says. Hivdil Levi, uminuhu Rosh Yeshiva. He separated Levi, I'm sorry, I added a word to the Rambam. Hivdil Levi, uminuhu Rosh. He separated Levi and appointed him a Rosh. Voshivu bi Yeshiva. And he sat him in yeshiva, l'lami derech Hashem, in order to teach the ways of God, v'lishmor mitzvos Avram, and to keep the mitzvos Avraminu. V'tziva azbanav sholei yafsiku mibnei Levi mamuna achar mamuna. There should not be stopping from Levi, appointee after appointee, to sit and learn Torah. Kedei sholei yishtachach halimud, so that nobody should ever forget learning. Listen to that, guys. He made Levi the Rosh. Seemingly, that means the Rosh Yeshiva. So I thought over here, we're saying that Yehuda was sent to be the Rosh Yeshiva. So what's shot in the Rambam? How does the Rambam understand that? So Rav Chaim answers, he thinks that shot behind that Rambam is simply put, Yehuda's Rosh Yeshiva, and Levi later on ended up becoming Rosh Yeshiva. Because what happened? Levi outlived Yehuda. So in the end, Levi became the Rosh Yeshiva. But that doesn't seem to be the wording of the Rambam. Does that sound like that's the wording of the Rambam? Minuhu Rosh is Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu made him the Rosh. That's not the wording of the Rambam itself. Now, there's a kasha. What's the Rambam's makor for saying this? How does the Rambam know that Levi was made Rosh Yeshiva? Where did he get that from? It's a Rambam. You can source it back to the Rambam. But where does the Rambam get it from? So the B'nai Binyamin points out there is no official makor for this. There's no official makor for where the Rambam gets it from. Bereishis Rabba Ayin Halacha Zayin. And Pirkei Rabbi Elazar Perek Lamed Zayin. It says Levi was chosen to be the Meister of Yaakov, you know, like we just said. That he would be designated to serve Hashem his whole life. But it doesn't say he's going to be Rosh Yeshiva. It doesn't say Rosh Yeshiva. So where does the Rambam get that from? I do not have an answer for this Rambam. I'd love to hear an answer. If anybody knows an answer, I'd obviously love to hear it. But there is no answer that I know to this question itself. But the Tiferes Shlomo adds to this, the Radomsker, and I think this kind of answers the question of the Rambam as well. Why Yehuda was chosen, not Levi and Yisachar? He says Yehuda was the one who was willing to take the Achrayas for Binyamin. A Rebbe, a Rosh Yeshiva, I should say, has to be someone who takes achrayas. He's someone who puts it on his shoulder and he says, I will bear that burden. Rebbeim have to sit there and teach their Talmidim and do everything with their Talmidim. A Rosh Yeshiva takes on the salaries. A Rosh Yeshiva makes sure that the yeshiva runs. If there's no one to clean, the Rosh Yeshiva has to find someone to clean. A Rebbe doesn't have to do that. A Rosh Yeshiva has to do that. Says to our Shlomo, we see from Yehuda that he's willing to take on that responsibility. He put it on his own shoulder, says the Radomsker. He was the one who did it. He watched every single bachur under his watch. Yehuda is that type of Rosh Yeshiva. That's the reason why Yehuda was chosen, because what he did to Binyamin shows what he would be like as a Rosh Yeshiva. Alino Shabbat says, people have to take that to heart. Whether you're a Rebbe and a Yeshiva, or you're just a parent, you have to care about everything that goes into your child and what happens to your child. Know all these types of things. Even if you're a lawyer who works 19 hours a day and is barely home at all, during those 5 hours that you're home, almost miscounted, during the 5 hours that you're home, take those 5 hours and spend 20 minutes with your kid. At least you have that. This is not muster to anybody. It's muster to me as much as anybody else. I'm also not home as much. But nonetheless, to find the time to be with your kids, to learn with your kids, to do more is such an important aspect. That's something that we learn from here. That's what Yehuda did. Took on the responsibility of Achrayas and put it on his shoulder. That's what we have to do. Say for all Torah. That's from Rav Label Katz. He quotes down, based on a Medrash Lekach Tov, a third aspect of Yehuda that allowed him to be a tremendous Rosh Yeshiva. Mesiras Nefesh. This is what a person needs. You have to be willing to give up your life for everything that your yeshiva holds dear. Give up something that you want. A Rosh Yeshiva may have to not take a salary in order for the yeshiva to run properly. That may be what he has to do. No one's telling a person that you have to lose everything in order for yeshiva to go through. But if you're a Rosh Yeshiva, you better understand there are times when you might not get paid or you're paid last. You're paid after everyone else. person has to literally be moser nefesh for that to happen. Maybe that's why Yehuda's willing to give up his children. He's willing to give up his olam hazeh. He's willing to give up his olam haba to bring Binyamin back. A person who's willing to be moser nefesh to make sure things happen, somebody who's willing to do such a thing, that's a person who could run a yeshiva. That's the idea behind Rechaim Volozhin was once asked why his yeshiva would lasted so long. I guess you could say his yeshiva was there, other yeshivas didn't make it, but Rechaim Volozhin's yeshiva made it. He answered that those yeshivas were made out of brick and mortar. His yeshiva was made out of his own tears. Meaning, the bricks were put together by the tears of Rechaim Volozhin. If you put a yeshiva together with those tears, how in the world could something bad happen? How is it possible that something bad could happen? Such a yeshiva will only last forever. Now, of course, we know Volozhin didn't last forever. There were issues with what happened in Volozhin toward the end by the war itself. But the concept is there. Panovich has been so successful for the same reason. It was Mesiris Nefesh of the Panovich Arov. The Mesiris Nefesh of what he was willing to do to make Panovich happen. His tremendous emunah and bitachon that made it happen. The Chafetz Chaim used to say when the Russians threatened to close down yeshivas, he said not a single yeshiva would be destroyed because of Gashmias. Not because of Gashmias. If it's felt in Ruchnias, if there's something wrong spiritually with the yeshiva could be closed down. But in Gashmias, because somebody on the outside wants to close, it's impossible. Absolutely impossible. Miam Loewe says that Yosef himself saw that Mesiris Nefesh that Yehuda had for Binyamin, and he said to Yehuda, you're going to be the Rosh Yeshiva. You're going to be the leader of where they're going to be. He saw what he was going to do over here. Yehuda had been accused for years of killing Yosef at Tzaddik. When he saw that Yehuda did everything he could to save Binyamin, he also loved him. He put him in charge of the yeshiva. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says the same thing as well. Doresh David, right, this idea, the Sefer says, perhaps that's why this is yeshiva specifically for Hora'ah. Hora'ah, again, we said, was Psak Halacha. If you look in the Gemara Makos and Daf Yud, Yehuda was not made to Paskin Shilas. It took a tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu for Yehuda to be able to end up paskining Shilas. If you know what Gemara I'm talking about, awesome. If you don't, it's the Gemara where his bones were out of place and Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven that the bones go back into place. He should be allowed in Yeshiva Shomaila. He should be allowed to be able to learn Torah with them. He should be allowed to have the Shmaitzah, to be able to speak in Shmaitzah. And is at the very end, to be able to come out Aliba de Hilchasa, to come out with the halacha properly of what you need over here, says the Doresh David. The idea of the Mesiris Nefesh of Yehuda is what got him to eventually bring down Hora, to bring Hora into the world. Hora psak halacha takes Mesiris Nefesh. You can't just learn a Mishnah Berurah sitting there. And again, I'm not making fun of anybody, but I am making fun of tons of people. A guy sitting back in his chair, in a really comfortable chair, having a coffee in one hand and a donut in the other. And you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah and you see what the Mishnah Berurah says. You can't paskin that way. It's not how a posik works. I'm not zocha to be a posik. But when people become poskim, these are people that have spent hours, days, and years of their life sitting, maybe even decades of their life, sitting and trying to figure out a single tosfos to understand how the psak goes through. Like they say about the Chafetz Chaim, that there was one time that he spent something like 3 days with his son-in-law, sitting there together trying to figure out one thing, one sugya. And when they figured it all out, the Chafetz Chaim put it in one line in the Mishnah Berurah. It's one line in the Mishnah Berurah will come out from 3 days of their sitting and learning that piece. So his son-in-law said to him, almost jokingly with a smile on his face, he said to his Rebbe, he said to his father-in-law, he said, do you think anybody's going to know when they read the line how much effort we put into this? Do you think they're going to know how much tears and sweat we put into this one line in the Mishnah Berurah? And the Chafetz Chaim said, two guys are standing there together, right? A father and a son. And they're building railroad tracks for the Tsar of Russia. And they're sitting there and they're building these railroad tracks and they put it down. And the son turns to the father and he says to the father, Dad, do you think anyone's going to know who put down these tracks? Who spent all this time and effort putting down the tracks? Do you think the people riding on the train are ever going to think about who spent all that time and effort and tears and sweat to put these tracks together? And the father looked at his son. Okay, and the original story slapped him in the face, which is awesome. Yeah, that's the way it was back then, you know? Either way, but he said to him, we're doing this for the Tsar. What do you mean? Who cares? Who cares? We're doing this for the Tsar. It doesn't matter what anybody knows or thinks, how much effort we put into this. We're doing it for him. And if he wants us to do this, this is what we're going to do. Chafetz Chaim said, do you think it matters if we spent a minute or 3 days or a year on one sugya to come out with a line of the Chafetz Chaim, to come out with the Mishnah Berurah? Said the Chafetz Chaim, we're doing this for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're doing this for Hashem. doesn't make a difference. That's the concept of how Yehuda went into things, and that's the reason why he was so successful as that. And that gets to, Jake, I'm sorry that I skipped it before, but you're 100% right. Even if Yehuda wouldn't be a Rosh Hashiva, says the Chassam Sofer, even if he's not, we have the concept, lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda. The shevet never leaves Yehuda. The rod never leaves Yehuda. If the kings are Hashmonaim kings, if they're Hasmonean or later on Herodian kings, and they're the ones who are going to be in charge, if they're the ones who are going to be there, then the Nesiim became from shevet Yehuda. From Hillel HaZaken, who came into power at some point in the Hashmonaic dynasty. Hillel HaZaken then gave his son over. Hillel's son was Shimon. Shimon gave it to Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken. Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken to Shimon Gamliel the first. From Shimon Gamliel the first to Rabbi Gamliel, the regular Rabbi Gamliel you see in the Gemara. Rabbi Gamliel the second to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel the second. To Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi gave it over to his son, Rabbi Gamliel, his son, Rabbi Gamliel, the son. And Shimon also was involved. His other son, Shimon. Of course, it has to be Shimon and Gamliel, right? Gamliel gave it to his son, Rabbi Yehuda Nisia. Rabbi Yehuda Nisia gave it to Hillel HaKatan. When there were kings in Klal Yisrael and people that were not from Shevet Yehuda, the Nisim became the kings for Klal Yisrael, and no one touched their yeshivas. There's even all those stories that you see in the Gemara of Rabbi Gamliel throwing Rabbi Yoshua out. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Rabbi Gamliel, eventually him getting thrown out of yeshiva. Of all these stories, at the very, very end with Rabbi Meir, you know what I'm talking about? With Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nassen at the end of Horius, and Dav Yud Dalin Mabez, I'm talking about the Gemara on Brachos, Chav Zion, and Yud Dalin Mabez and Yud Gimel Mabez and Horius, on the very bottom top of Yud Dalin and Aleph, where it goes through, the Nisim had to show that they were Malachim. They were kings. And you have to listen to me. I make the decisions here, no one else. No one else does this. The king might be sitting in his palace, might be in his throne room, but I decide what happens in yeshiva. That's what they did, because that's where Yehuda goes to. When there's no one else, there could be a Yosef in the palace. Yehuda's in charge of the yeshiva. That's the concept of what the Nisim came out with, and that's what happened later on. There's a Tzapnas Panach here that's absolutely amazing, but I want to end with this. The one thing that you can't skip out on is the Torah This Torah Shlomo, I'm just going to tell you the Medrash, okay? I'm not going to explain it because it's awesome. When Yehuda was on his way down, the Satan met him and told him, Yosef died while you were traveling. Go back to Eretz Canaan. So what did Yehuda do? Yehuda looked at him and turned him into a pile of bones. A gal shel atzamos. That's what the Medrash says. Okay, I don't want to explain that right now, but I have an explanation that's absolutely awesome for it. Rabbanim of Pshischa says that Goshna, Gimel Shin Nunhei, is same gematria as Mashiach. As Mashiach. Yehuda was being sent to show that he will bring about Mashiach. That Mashiach ben David will come from him, not from Yosef. And it will be through us creating yeshivas and finding times and places to learn. That's what's going to bring it there. The four letters, Gimel, Shin, Nun, Hey, obviously appear on the four sides of a dreidel in Chutz Laretz. That when we're in Chutz Laretz, we have Goshna. And we play with the dreidel. The concept is to bring about Mashiach in the proper fashion, the same way Yehuda did by going to build the base medrash first. That's what we do as well. That's something we have in mind over Hanukkah, that even in the darkest of days, we still learned as much as we could, and that's why they played with the dreidel. The plan with the dreidel is to bring about Mashiach in their times. Nes Gadol HaYasham, the concept of Nes Gadol HaYasham. There's more to this, obviously. There's an Itutse Shimshin here. Ve'es Yehuda Shalach Lofanav is a gematria of Shiloh, which is referring to Yehuda's bracha and being great, etc. Ad Kiavo Shiloh, which is a reference to Mashiach. There's so much more over here, but the idea, I think, is still conceptually sound. So the first idea that we said is that Yehuda was sent down to bring about a clear path for Yaakov. Then we went into the base Talmud, why they needed a base Talmud, and then why Yehuda specifically had to bring about that base Talmud. And finally, our idea of how this brings about Mashiach. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbat.